Little Foxes by Michael Mopurgo, Chapter 5. Billy was so overjoyed at his success that he quite forgot to prepare himself for the onslaught that was waiting for him at home. Auntie May was at him before he could close the door behind him. "I want to know where you've been, Billy," she said, her thin lips quivering with rage. Billy looked up at her and felt sorry for her. "Mr. Brownlow from school rang me after lunch and told me you had vanished. Just not come back," he said, "and I've been worried sick ever since." "Sick, Billy? How could you do this to me? 5 foster children I've had, and not one of them ever played truant, not one, until you. And both my own boys never missed a day of school, not one day. It's too bad, Billy, too bad." She was near to tears, and Billy liked her at that moment for the first time. And then she spoilt it by following up with the usual threat. "Now, if you don't tell me, Billy, right now, where you've been all afternoon, you know what'll happen, don't you?" "Been out," said Billy. "Where?" "Dunno, just out. Didn't feel well, did I? Came on all dizzy-like." "Then why didn't you come home, Billy?" "I dunno, couldn't find a way, could I? Dizzy, wasn't I?" It was all on the spur of the moment, a lie that was wafer-thin, and Billy knew it. But as it turned out, it was the very best story he could have dreamed up. If he'd had an entire week to make up the story, it could not have been better. Within the hour, he was inside a doctor's surgery and explaining the symptoms in more detail. The doctor, who had tufts of red hair growing out of his ears, pressed and prodded him all over, and Auntie May kept muttering that she'd always fed him right and that no child of hers had ever had this trouble before. In the end, the doctor diagnosed a mild infection of the middle ear, gave him some antibiotic and said he should come back in a week if he wasn't better. "What about school, doctor?" Auntie May asked, dragging Billy to the door by his wrist. "No school," said the doctor, without looking up. "Up and about at home, but no school. And best to wrap up warm when he goes out. And he should go out. Fresh air is good for us all. Don't coop him up." Billy could not believe his good fortune as he walked home that evening with Auntie May. She was going on about how she knew all along there must be something wrong with him to go wandering off from school like that, and how Mr. Brownlow had no right to accuse one of her boys of playing truant. "Teachers these days," she said, shaking her head, "they're just too young, like the policemen. It's what I've always said, no experience. You need experience to look after children, and you have to be sensitive. That Mr. Brownlow wouldn't know if he stepped on a hedgehog with his bare feet. Now, Billy dear, we're going to have to feed you up and get you strong again, aren't we?" So long as Billy was smothered in at least 2 scarves, a coat and a balaclava, Auntie May let him go out for long walks on his own. But he had to be back for mealtimes. And Billy mentioned as casually as he could that his favourite food these days was corned beef hash. Of course he detested it, but it had the desired result. Auntie May went out and bought 2 dozen tins of it. It was cheaper that way. To join the others on the shelf in the larder. Billy thought that he could keep his foxes alive on about 2 tins of corned beef a day, washed down with milk. And it was not difficult, under all his protective clothing, to disguise the fact that he was carrying 2 tins of corned beef each morning when he went out and a plastic bag of milk powder. Auntie May did not seem to notice that the pile of corned beef tins at the back of the larder was diminishing rather too quickly. But just in case she did, Billy made a point of making himself occasionally corned beef sandwiches, which he forced himself to eat in front of her. And she never even looked in the old tin of milk powder. When it ran out after a few days, Billy spent all his sweet money on replacing it. Fortunately, the fox cubs never seemed to tire of their new diet and came out for it whenever they heard Billy coming through the wilderness. They would be waiting for him on the mound, and although they still kept their distance as he opened the tins and spooned it out onto the grass, they were coming closer to him each day. Billy was often tempted to reach out and touch them as they fed, but he felt that would be a risk and perhaps a liberty this soon. They would come to him and want to be touched only when they trusted him completely. He would wait. He would sit cross-legged on the mound, and the fox cubs would play around him now, for the most part ignoring him completely, but occasionally they would all 4 sit and look at him. He thought he ought to speak to them then, but decided words might be too sharp. So he would hum gently, and when they became used to this, he would put words to the tunes, his own words and his own tunes, and they listened, ears pricked, heads on one side, fascinated for a time. but there were always interruptions to spoil his brief concerts, a tempting tail to pounce on, an essential scratch behind the ear, a dead leaf that just had to be chased. As Billy expected, it was always the largest cub that was his most loyal listener, his grey eyes never leaving Billy's face as he sang. This fox was the first to take food from Billy's hand some days later. He was the first to submit to being touched, and once he had consented, the others followed almost at once. Now they would play, not just around Billy as he sat on the mound, but with him. They sprang over his legs, hid behind his back, chewed on his shoes, and lay up against him to sleep. He had their trust now and their love. He had kept his promise to the dead vixen. The absence of the swan was all that saddened him. Every day, after he had covered the vixen's grave with fresh flowers, he would make his way through the graveyard to the canal, just in case she should be there waiting for him. He was no longer offended that she wasn't there. Curiously, he felt quite certain that he would see her again one day, and meanwhile he had his foxes to care for, and they needed him. He stayed with them now every minute he could, only returning home for the obligatory meals and the inevitable questions from Auntie May that he fended off with increasing skill. All this time, Auntie May suspected nothing. When asked where he had been, Billy would always just reply, "Out." Only once was his secret nearly discovered, and then it was the fox's fault, not his. It was the musky smell of the foxes that Billy brought home with him on his clothes that nearly gave the game away. As he came into the flat one evening, Auntie Bay wrinkled her nose up and insisted on knowing where he had been and what he had been up to. And Billy parried the questions as best he could. "Then you've been rolling in something, Billy," she said. "No, Auntie May," he said, "I don't think I have." "Well, you smell something rotten," she said, "and don't you come sitting on my good sitting room furniture smelling like that. I don't know what you get up to, Billy, I really don't. Sometimes I think I'd be better off without you, I really do. Now get those stinking clothes off, I'll have to wash them again." After feigning another dizzy spell one evening as he got up from the kitchen table after tea, Billy managed to extend the doctor's diagnosis of his middle ear infection for 3 more wonderful weeks. By this time, though, the cubs' appetites seemed to have doubled. They always seemed hungry now, even after their meals, and Billy realised he was not going to be able to supply their food only from Auntie May's larder for much longer without arousing suspicion. "I know you love it, Billy," Auntie May had said on more than one occasion, "but I must be buying in at least a dozen tins a week for that corned beef. Can't think where you put it at all. Eat me out of house and home, you will." And suddenly, much to Auntie May's relief, his dizzy spell ceased and he returned to school, where he had to endure Mr. Brownlow's inevitable sarcastic welcome. Billy had his reasons for going back. He knew that there were always vast quantities of leftovers after school dinners, and they had to be put somewhere. He determined to find out where that was. His investigations led him to a row of black dustbins outside the kitchen door behind the school. They were conventionally hidden around the corner and not overlooked by any windows, and he was able to rifle through the dustbins with little chance of being discovered. There was enough food there to feed an army of foxes, but he chose only what he thought the fox cubs would appreciate most, sausages and bread rolls and cheese. As it turned out, he chose badly, for when he emptied his duffel bag on the mound that afternoon during lunch break, the fox cubs simply played with the sausages, tossing them into the air and ignored the rest. He tried to encourage them by breaking the sausages open, but although they ate some of the cheese, they were still unenthusiastic. "What's the matter with you?" he cried. "I can't get you corned beef all the time. They don't serve it up at school. No one would touch it if they did. Look, I know it's school food, but it's food, isn't it? It's not that bad." But the foxes clearly did not agree, and they lay down together in a disconsolate, disappointed pile. "All right," said Billy, "I'll see if I can find something better, but it won't be until after tea time." And they would not play with him that day, so he left them and made his way unhappily back to school. He would have to raid the dustbins once again, he thought. There was nothing else to be done. Billy was sitting alone on the steps of the mobile classroom waiting for afternoon lessons to begin and wondering how he could lay his hands on a large supply of corned beef without having to shoplift it when there was a scream of delight from the direction of the school gates. He ignored it at first, but then sauntered over to see what was up. The playground fence was lined from end to end with children, noses pressed through the mesh and clinging on with their fingers. And there was a rush of running children all about him, and the teacher's strident voice above his head. "What's the matter here?" "It's a fox, sir," said someone. "Foxes! There's three of them," said someone else. And Billy barged his way to the front of the crowd. "Well, I never! Bold as brass," said the teacher, standing beside him. "Never seen that before, have you, Billy?"
No, sir," said Billy quickly. "Never."
Three fox cubs were sitting out on the grass in the open just outside the fence. The children cooed with delight, but the oohs and ahs were soon superseded by a ferocious band of hunters that aimed their fingers through the wire and blasted away at the fox cubs, who suddenly, alarmed by the distant hullabaloo, wriggled back under the wire and vanished into the undergrowth of the wilderness beyond. That afternoon, Mr. Brownlow made them write a story about foxes, but Billy could not write a word. He sat stunned by his window. And when Mr. Brownlow asked why he had not written anything, he said he wasn't feeling too well. And this time, it was no lie.